It used to be that, could you move at the speed of business? That was kind of one of the monikers, a company needs to be able to move at the speed of business. And I would say that actually, our challenge today is that we need to be moving at the speed of our culture.
Hi, I'm Paul Miller, and this is Digital Workplace Impact, where we investigate and explore the ideas, practices, and people that are impacting the new digital worlds where we all work. Digital Workplace Impact is produced by the Digital Workplace Group, a strategic partner and boutique consultancy covering all aspects of the evolving digital workplace industry through membership, benchmarking, and boutique consulting services. And if you'd like more information, visit digitalworkplacegroup.com. So today's episode is with Steve Wilson, who runs all things digital workplace at Walmart. It's a kind of story that really kind of takes your breath away. I mean, the size of Walmart as an organization, as a set of employees, as a kind of entity, is it's kind of larger than a lot of countries. So it's kind of amazing the way that Steve, in a really calm, kind of no-nonsense way, seems to get his head round how you really engage and connect with 2.3 million, yes, I said 2.3 million employees in Walmart and related organizations, both in the US and around the world. The numbers just take your breath away. I think what they're doing and the way that they think is really impressive, and lessons there. I mean, frankly, if they can do it at Walmart, you can do it anywhere. I'm delighted to be joined by Steve Wilson. Steve is the Director, Digital Strategy and Brand Engagement at Walmart. How do you describe Walmart? Well, it's one of the world's largest retail brands. It's a really, it's got a colossal workforce. I couldn't believe this when I read this. There's 1.5 million employees across 4,700 stores in the US alone. And that's actually 1% of the US working population, which is a statistic that I love. It's also got 800,000 employees in its international operations, for example, Asda in the UK, the Sam's Club warehouse brand. So it's, to call it a complex environment is a bit of an understatement, but it's fantastic to have you on the show today, Steve.
Well, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Great. So just to start off, I read a few kind of stats there about Walmart. It's a huge, as I say, kind of almost mind-blowing in scale organization. Can you just give me a picture of what it's like to try and engage 1.5 million employees?
Well, I think one of the most interesting things about the scale, Paul, is just the spectrum of personalities and talent sets that are required to actually, deliver each and every day, to our customers around the globe. And that's everything from everybody making sure that the parking lot is clean and picked up and that those, shopping trolleys or carts are being, brought back in from the parking lot, all the way up to data scientists in our e-commerce labs, our pilots that fly our corporate jets, the mechanics that take care of those jets, the merchandising people who make sure that that we have products to put on the shelves, the logistics people to make sure that, our truck drivers and our distribution center and fulfillment center workers to make sure that all of that gets to where it's supposed to be, whether that is our neighborhood markets or an Asda supermarket or your front door.
Yeah, and it's really, it feels to me like it's, I was talking to somebody in Luxembourg this week, and I think they've got 400,000 people live in Luxembourg. The population swells on any particular day. But, you've got more people working in Walmart than some countries.
Indeed. And it's actually one of the things, you know, from a personal perspective, it is actually one of the things that attracted me to the organization, and actually one of the reasons that I took on the role that I was have been doing for just over 6 years now at Walmart. And that is the scale. The scale is, even you know, working there for some time, it still is just remarkable to me each day, and particularly in large events. When you think about, you know, a shopping holiday in the United States like our Black Friday, you know, the volume of product that gets moved through a store in a single day. And that in and of itself is remarkable. But then you take the fact that you have to replenish that store with that same amount of product that night for the next day, so that shopping experience is an equal shopping experience for the next customer who comes through the door. And that's the thing that is just, when you think of all the things that have to happen and be coordinated, you know, 24/7, that's what makes the job exciting. It's never boring. Sometimes, obviously, you know, its scale can also be, you know, there's always those, you know, in the reality of moving things through an organization, you know, our challenge is always, you know, moving at the speed at which our customers want us to evolve. Mm. So that's one of the largest, I would say, you know, it used to be that, you know, could you move at the speed of business? You know, that was kind of one of the monikers, you know, well, you know, a company needs to be able to move at the speed of business. And I would say that actually, you know, our challenge today is that we need to be moving at the speed of our culture.
That's a very different metronome.
yeah. And that makes me think, what is the speed of our culture? What does that sort of mean in practice for Walmart?
I think it means, at its simplest level, it is about meeting the expectations of our incredibly broad customer base across the United States and around the world. Each of those has, you know, a very different way of looking at the world. And at the same time, we have to be able to, you know, find the happy medium in those spaces, whether that's, in terms of education, in terms of vision for the future, in terms of politics. And, you know, those are all factors that the organization has to play, you know, that's the landscape in which we have to play within. I would say, you know, the things that we take very seriously, for example, are things like, the demand of resources and, you know, the various responses to global, to some of the climate change and, you know, global warming types of environments and the impact that, you know, organizations have on those and their ability, quite frankly, to, you know, to move the needle in the right direction on reducing packaging or waste or, you know, moving to achieving a zero carbon footprint for their organization.
Yeah, I've got so many questions going around my head at the moment, and one of the things that makes me, you know, so we're the culture, the speed of culture, and it's kind of ironic, isn't it? Because there's also this sort of countervailing thing where people want to slow down because we're all so busy and people are so pressurized. On the other hand, there's an expectation around speed, speed and convenience. I mean, your story, though, about the environmental impact makes me I was listening to a story by Andrew McAfee, who's written a new book. He's a MIT professor. He wrote a book called The Second Machine Age, Was it the second machine age or fourth machine age? One of the two. Anyway, he's written a book called Doing More with Less. And he talks about the what you'd call the aluminum can, you know, like a Coke or a Pepsi can, and how essentially it's become lighter and lighter and lighter. And the organizations had an incentive to do that because if you can make it lighter, yes, it uses less, but also it costs less. And so, as you say, you've got such power to change behavior, affect culture. Are there any examples that you could give me of, and maybe there's an example where you've kind of been able to digitally engage people in Walmart in a way that's had, that has shifted the needle a little bit on the environmental side?
Sure. I think that we have, certainly from a digital perspective, we use, obviously in my day-to-day responsibilities, is really about serving as the communications platform to those 1.5 million associates here in the United States, and then serving as a center of excellence for other organizations around the globe that are trying to accomplish the same thing. So that's things like developing platforms, et cetera. And one of the things that we're very proud of is our ability to be able to, you know, bring those stories. In fact, one of the things that we do with the platform is, you know, we find it to be equally important to have the conversations about what the company is doing, not just when our associates are on the clock, you know, in the store, in the fulfillment center, et cetera, but also our ability to reach that associate and, you know, tell them about what's going on and quite frankly, what they're able to do in their local areas, or local communities, you know, to affect some of these things. And that it's a broad range. And we use environment as an example, but, we're equally as important, you know, to make sure that we're doing the right things at the community level and that it's not just the company that is, you know, making a company-directed donation, but in fact, you know, that there's input from the associates, from the store manager on, you know, how donations happen at their community level. It's letting those associates know what the impact is of all of the solar panels or the wind generators there, you know, in their parking lots or on their roofs and, you know, what that means. I think a very interesting, and this is one that's actually was a fact before I even joined the organization, which I thought was a really interesting one, which is just taking feedback from the 1.5 million associates, because there's a lot of really great ideas out there on how you can reduce the footprint of whatever's going on in that store or other company facility. For example, you know, just asking a question of, you know, why do we, you use the example of a Coke machine or a Coke can, but equally, if you have a Coke machine that's sitting in the front of the store and just asking the question, there's a lighted panel on the front of that Coke machine, and to just ask the question, does it really have to be lit? could we actually take and make that so that it wasn't drawing even that much electricity, you know, and again, when you start to multiply that across the footprint that the organization has, that's a significant impact. And to your point, it's straight to the bottom line. Right, because now you're reducing the electrical costs, which is, you know, is reducing your overall cost to the organization.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And this is nothing to do with Walmart, but I was looking at there was an article in the Financial Times this week looking at how the UK has moved away from coal. I mean, really dramatically since about 1980. But what was interesting. There's been a big rise in renewables and so on. But what was interesting was overall was that even though the population of the country's gone up, I don't know, probably 6 or 7 million, the actual energy consumed on any particular day has gone down quite significantly. And I know that also in the US, it's kind of these, and I think what's interesting when we're talking at the scale that you are is these small changes having a big impact. But you mentioned earlier that you were partly attracted to Walmart and this particular role because of the size. What was it about the size that attracted you? Because a lot of people would go, I don't even know where to start with this. This is the most daunting idea possible. Give me something nice and simple.
Well, sure. Maybe just to share just a tiny little bit of my background, it didn't happen overnight. My career actually started after a stint in military service. I went back to grad school, and out of graduate school, I was recruited by then a very small company called Oracle. And I was in the very, very early days of Oracle. There was only about 400 and some change employees at Oracle, and grew with that company till it was about 5,500, and then moved and was recruited by Microsoft and spent 10 years up at Microsoft in Seattle. And then I jumped over completely from my technology side of my career and actually walked over to the other side and sat on the business side implementing technology for a small company called McDonald's Corporation.
Right.
And it was really there that I learned and had a passion for the size and scale. And so my role was a very similar role at McDonald's that I hold today at Walmart. And really, the only difference between those two roles is in how the messaging gets affected. In the McDonald's role, you know, most of your messaging is affected through an owner-operator or a franchisee. And so your point tends to be community. So you're trying to still reach those, you know, one in McDonald's case, about 1.6 million crew people, but you're doing that through about 5,500 owner operators. And they have their own profit interest in the equation versus one that is, you know, 100% company owned. Mm-hmm. And so that was where I really jumped in. And so I learned scale, you know, kind of along my career. In working with large, you know, on the technology side, working with large companies in implementing large scale systems, and really cut my teeth when I was at Microsoft there. And I was part of the team that developed and launched the Microsoft network with Windows 95. And so in a very short period of time, we built out basically an entire competitive footprint to what was then AOL and CompuServe. This is, yeah, you know, kind of pre-commercial internet when it was still dial-up services. And then there during the, you know, the wild shift of commerce over to the internet. And so it was very much it wasn't something that happened overnight, but to me, it's the demand of having to try to get, you know, very large projects. From a collaboration and coordination perspective, you have to engage a lot of different views and you have a lot of tension. And I think my early days as a product manager really helped with that, because you really, you know, a good product manager kind of sits in between the development of the product and the potential consumer, and the ability to be able to kind of strike the balance between those two tensions of, you know, what does the customer want? What can we deliver? When can we deliver that? At what cost can we deliver that? And is that palatable by the customer? And those early days really make that I think a really great foundation. For scale.
It's a really intriguing career as you move through these organizations, and I can see how that sort of product mindset. But tell me, so how have you used your intranet as a vehicle for connecting people? I mean, how have you approached this with Walmart One, which I'm going to say is the world's largest intranet, and if it isn't, it's certainly one of the world's largest intranets. What have you approached this, and where do you think you've got to?
Sure, I think it actually has been a very strong evolution over, you know, my tenure at Walmart. When we started, it was a homegrown system that we had worked with a very, you know, with a local agency to help us build. So this was back 2012, and it had reached its end of life cycle, and so it was very much about moving to a platform that brought us into the current technology stack, and it allowed us to. We went from being able to really connect with about 20 to 30% of our associates. And our real vision was to be able to touch our associates first in the United States, and then to be able to actually build a universal platform that would be allowed to be shared around the globe. And I'd like to say that that happened in the first couple of years that I was there. But the demands of the business, and as I said, to be able to meet the expectations of the operations in an organization that is as large as Walmart, that took us a little bit longer to do. So we made the decision to actually first start with a platform that served only the associate when they were not at work. And that really served as a great launching point, because it was a place where they could come to get the information that they needed, from their own personal interactions. So those are things like employee benefits, you know, their pay stubs, their schedule, their diary, or their work schedules when they were not at work. And we saw that interaction go from, you know, a typical interaction of, you know, associate coming maybe once a week, and then it was 2 to 3 times a week. And, you know, they were spending, a couple of minutes. And then we said, well, how can we start to ladder in some of the reputational information? How can we connect all of the applications that we would like to be able to? So if they wanted to make a donation of their time or their money, they could do that. If they wanted to, you know, change, you know, some of their information, we basically started to create, you know, kind of this single platform, this single footprint where they could rely on the fact that, you know, they could connect to pretty much any system that they needed to when they were not at work and not on the clock. And then we mobile enabled that with a native application a couple of years after launching that platform, and that was the inflection point that really took it to a completely different level, because now we were in their pockets, in their purses, and you know that we went from, you know, a kind of a daily routine of, you know, 150 or 200,000 associates visiting to, 600 to 800,000 associates visiting every day, and about 1.1 million associates coming, unique associates that were coming each month. And, you know, there are, you know, I'd like to say that we reach each and every associate, but the reality is that, you know, there's about 10% of the population that just is not interested in interacting except when absolutely necessary. And so we're not able to do that. In the last year, we have actually done something that was the next step in what we were, was always the vision from the time I got there. And that was to actually merge not only our off-clock experience when they're not at work, but to merge the platforms. The day-to-day store operational platform was another platform and another complete technology stack. And our vision was to always merge those two things together. And it is in this year, in fact, we flipped the switch at the beginning of our year this year in February, and that has, and we have brought on, so we now run the, it is now a true intranet, extranet, and we run it not only for our off-the-clock experience, but also it is also running our day-to-day business on the clock. And so all of that content is being served through a single platform, and we are extending that platform out to our Asda business, our China business, our Mexico business, our Canada business. So it gives us a flexibility and a leverage point where we can build a component for this platform one time and leverage it across this, you know, a much, much, much larger scale.
And so if I'm one of the guys who is in the car park collecting trolleys and pushing them back, and I'm always amazed at how they managed to do all that. And how do I access the intranet? What device would I be typically using? When would I be doing it? And what would I be looking to do when I access it?
Sure. No, that's a great question. And that would depend on both your role and kind of what the requirement of that role would be. For the person who was picking up the trolleys, that would typically, the interaction would probably be one of two or three ways. It would be either the mobile phone that is in their pocket, that they could then log into. The entire platform is both completely responsive, so it will, you know, manage itself to a wide variety of devices, you know, so handhelds, tablets, and desktops. And then there is also a shell that is wrapped around in a native application type of environment. There's a shell that is wrapped around that effort as well, so that you can take advantage of some of the native functionality of the mobile device itself. So particularly around camera, microphone, et cetera. They also have kiosks in the stores or in the logistics centers. And if you were a truck driver, that would actually be a very specialized tablet that is built for their particular form and function. But again, it is all tying everything back through a universal login. So there is a single sign-on, a single user ID, and then we do all of the connections on the back end for, you know, the various applications, etc. And then we try to, as best we can, we actually try to then, of course, bring in all of the human resource platforms. We are not building native applications on the platform, but it is much more, you could consider it to be a doorway or a portal to a lot of other different platforms, both mobile and software as a service. And, increasingly just a lot of different cloud-based applications as well. So,
And if I'm a truck driver, so I've now stopped collecting trolleys, I'm now driving the truck. Tell me what kind of things I might actually be wanting to do. So I get onto the particular app in the environment. What are the typical things that I might be wanting to do?
Sure. That would be things like running, what is your schedule? Where are you scheduled to take, the next load or loads? in their particular case, they have a very, in the United States at least, it's a very unique way of handling some of that. That device is actually also has a lot of native functionality in it that is very specific to the truck, to the inventory, to the load, you know, that is that they're interacting with. And then at the same time, it's also allowing them access to, you know, a wide variety of applications that are, you know, that, certainly not when they're driving, but when, you know, yeah, they're in a rest,
sure,
in a rest type of situation, would be just, you know, what are the next things that are coming up? For example, here in the United States, you know, we have our benefits are kind of, we enroll our employees in benefits once a year at a very specific time. So that period is coming up right now. So we have a very short window to enroll, you know, the, or at least speak to the 1.5 million associates and inform them of the wide variety of benefits that are, you know, geographically determined, right? So
right,
in other words, you know, a health, you know, a health here in the United States, you know, the healthcare systems are, you know, based on a geography. And so, you know, the ability to go in and look at that, it would be, is there training that would be scheduled? And to look at, am I scheduled for the next set of training? And in many cases, can I receive the training right on that device? So for example, I have a whole, even as a, at the home office, as a manager of people, I have a whole set of certifications that I have to, you know, go through each year. And the wide, right, the, you know, the wide kind of list of that, I'm able to do, again, from any device, kind of anywhere, any device. And because I'm not locked into a timing where I don't, you know, I'm a salaried employee, so I don't have the restrictions of what content I can see when I'm, you know, not at work.
Sure.
So, and that is, that's a very, very key differentiator in the platform, is the understanding that when you're at work, the devices and the platform are aware of, are you physically on our network? Are you physically in one of our locations? Mm. Have you clocked in? Are you on the clock or off the clock? Are you on a break? The devices know what your schedule is. And of course there are tools that will allow you to override some of that. You know, should you say, oh, you know, I was supposed to take my break at this point, but you know, the demands, you know, made me shift that. So,
right.
You know, it allows you to do that, but there's a lot of intelligence in the network and in the device and in the application itself.
Yeah, I think what comes across to me is just how kind of useful this is going to be to people in different ways, depending on what their different roles are. I mean, and as I understand it, you're big users of Workplace by Facebook. And the platform you use is Adobe Experience Manager, or have I got some of that wrong?
You are absolutely correct. And
okay,
then we also we use for our collaboration, and we have that, of course, is a separate service. But what we have done is we have built components in Adobe Experience Manager that allow us to surface each of the very specific work group or within Workplace itself, because Workplace is not one thing within Facebook, but it's many, 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 many groups. So, you know, I probably belong to 30 or 40 groups within our Workplace platform. So there's one for my team specifically. There is another for the next layer in my organization. You know, so I report up through the digital strategy and brand engagement team. And so that has its own that has its own work group for us to collaborate as that team of about 28 people. And then the next layer is our corporate communications group, and then we report up to, you know, corporate affairs. So in each of those layers, there is a group that allows us to communicate, you know, more horizontally across the organization as you kind of move up. And then there are, you know, the wide open, anybody can join, you know, what's happening at the home office, what's happening within the company, what's happening, you know, there's a classified section for the geography. So, you know, even people wanting to, you know, sell used baby equipment or that type of thing, you know, so or give it away. So yeah, it's a very, and what we've done, like I said, what we've done with Adobe Experience Manager is we've built a specialized component that actually surfaces those workplace or the work, yeah, those groups inside. So, and that is up to the content manager as to where and what group they want to surface and in what location on the intranet or extranet.
Yeah.
So that's really up to them.
Yeah. And I know you've had a real focus on content for the associates. What's the strategy there?
It's a very broad strategy, but it's one in which we, so there are very much at its highest level, we basically split the kind of that experience into two very kind of large buckets. And that is what we would call to be directive or non-directive content. And that, again, those are labor considerations for those. So there's content that we can deliver to you when you're being paid to consume that content. And then there's content that we can deliver to you anytime, anywhere, any device. And so that's kind of that's the largest umbrella that we kind of look at. And then at the next layer down, that's where we start to get into the, you know, if it's a directive piece, then there's a whole organization of folks that are responsible for delivering what, you know, what that is. That's everything from task lists to policies and procedures to playbooks to how do you reset a particular modular to,
yeah.
And so that is a group of content managers that are enabled by the Adobe Experience Manager across the organization. So it's a highly decentralized set of work. And the way that we differentiate that is at the highest level, it's my team and an equivalent role on the operational side. And we make the editorial calls for what you would see when you first log into your device. So what is that homepage? What is that landing page? What's important? What needs to be, you know, what do you need to see? Based on your role, your geography, you know, what the company wants you to see.
Yeah.
And then from there, we move all the way down. So that's you know, everything from our, again, I keep kind of going back to reputational content, but it's all of the content that we would like you to know about the company that's useful for you in your role. And again, more and more, we're trying to personalize that so that if you have a passion for, like, for example, I have a passion for what we are doing in kind of the environmental space and what we're doing to work, you know, to modify our facilities for solar energy and wind energy and, you know, reducing that footprint. And so more and more, we're trying to get where if you've shown us a predisposition for a set of content, you know, we would like to be able to serve you more relevant content, you know, specifically to you. And even better if it's, you know, about, you know, stores or facilities that are in your geographic area, or maybe even the store that you're in, you know, if there's a very specific story. We're also very involved in having our associates tell their stories about their stories. And so, you know, we're talking today about the internet, extranet in one Walmart. But we actually have a broad range of tools that we use to actually talk to the associate. It is a channel in a strategy for reaching our associates, kind of not just, you know, where we have, where we have control over the messaging set, but also we're speaking to them in their own social channels. So we have, we have several Instagram accounts. We have Facebook. We have Facebook accounts. We have local store Facebook accounts. Twitter, our corporate website, and so there's a very tight integration with all of this content. And in many cases, the content that we're developing as a digital strategy and brand engagement group is to develop the content holistically, and then be able to parcel it out by channel and audience, and then we make the appropriate changes to the content or the editorial changes to the content to make sure that it is appropriate for the device. So you're not going to put a full web page piece of content in an Instagram account or a Twitter feed, but you will, what are the salient points that you want to get, potentially to that associate to be able to speak about that. So
yeah, I mean, and I can sort of feel the complexity of it all, but also I also have a sense of an overarching strategy with it. And what would you, is there some particular kind of challenge inside the environment that you service that, if only we could fix this, if only we could sort of address this particular kind of requirement, is there some little kind of thing that you'd love to be able to solve in the next few years?
That is another great question. I have a list.
Right.
I would say are a couple of things. One is that we're more and more can we we're moving this direction, and so I don't want to draw the picture that this is not something that we're not already starting to do, but we really are trying to get to this, developing what we internally call the audience of one, and that's where we're really trying to get to, which is to try to deliver that personalized experience of, because we know that your time is precious. We know that the amount of mindset that we're going to have within that time is precious for us. And so how do we do the best job of actually delivering that to our audience types, and that is, we're testing and evolving the systems daily to try to get us to that point. You heard me say that. And so that's implementing targeting. It's implementing personalization. It's understanding kind of who you are and where you are and what is your role and what is your education level and what have you shown us to be interested in, and what do we need you to be interested in? What do we need you to care about, and how to move that? And so that's one set in a big bucket. I would say that the second set, that the other thing that I would love to be able to measure is a much deeper analysis, selfishly, for understanding, are we actually moving the needle? Because if you think about the type of communications that we deal with at a reputational level, it's a much less direct line to the cash register. And so, in a sales environment, you run an ad, that there's a call to action. The customer takes that, either chooses to respond to that call to action or not. And you have some level of, was that successful or not, based just on the pure execution and the fact that they rang the cash register. We don't have that in the reputational environment, and it's a much longer lead cycle with a lot more influential cycles, a lot more influencers to that cycle. And so I think it's a, if I could have a magic wand, it would be, how do we better deliver to our management, a set of insights into the effectiveness of the actual, of the communications efforts that are going on. I mean, it's class. I mean, in your world as well, right? I mean, it's great, but okay, but what does 3%? What does a 3% bump? In readership actually mean? Did you take the action? If I have a set of goals that says, I want this many people to, take the course and to pass the test but the ability to quickly and easily be able to say and tie some of those things, those efforts back into, are the happier associates, anecdotally, we all believe that to be true, is that actually making an impact for our customers, for our customer satisfaction, for our company revenue, for our profit, for our, in an organization of our size, it's a very large Rubik's cube to kind of spin around and get to. And we would very much, we're working on that as well. We're really trying to figure that out.
Yeah, and I imagine you must be somebody who enjoys complexity, because it sounds like you kind of like navigating that. And I mean, congratulations on everything you've been achieving. It's kind of what seems like a daunting challenge. I think, I can sense the passion and sort of systematic approaches that you bring to it. So, Steve, any final reflections or things you want to say just before we bring our conversation to a close?
No, what I would say is that I think mine was, in all of my conversations with all of my friends and colleagues, that don't know more about us as at Walmart and our family of brands, is to look beyond what you read sometimes in the newspaper or on the online and get to know us as an organization. I think the thing that I'm absolutely passionate about, but what I'm most passionate about, is the remarkable set of people that I get to work with every day across the organization, and the deep love that it's typically the negative stories that kind of make that make the threshold, but I can't tell you of how many countless stories of the work that our associates do each and every day to deliver on the customer satisfaction piece that you'd be very, very surprised at just how passionate that group of folks really are. And so get to know those folks, look beyond just the just that vest or the badge, and get to know them. Know them as people, because they're really remarkable people.
It's a kind of statement, have a conversation, engage in the conversation, and you never know what you're going to find out and learn. Well, thank you so much, Steve. It's been wonderful getting an insight into what Walmart's been doing and is doing, and all the things you're thinking about. And thank you so much for coming on today.
Well, thank you, Paul, as well. It's been a pleasure.
Digital Workplace Impact is produced by the Digital Workplace Group, a strategic partner and boutique consultancy supporting more than 100 leading businesses and public institutions to advance their intranets and broader digital workplaces through benchmarking, research and practitioner expertise. For more information, visit digitalworkplacegroup.com. And if you'd like to listen to previous episodes of the show, go to digitalworkplacegroup.com/DWG_podcast. This is Paul Miller wishing you well until next time.